This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show for your Friday. Good to be with you. Matt and Patrick here today. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, we're going to be interviewing Reginald Wet Noodle. He is the Sex Crimes Division expert for the Minnesota GOP, or not for the, just the GOP, let me correct, the GOP, Republican Sex Crime Division expert. Because I guess he's upset with me because when we talked about the overturning of Roe v. Wade, we mentioned the fact that, you know, the way that they're dismantling Roe v. Wade is going to open up the review of a lot of different things, including laws that were regulating how you could have sex in your own private bedroom. Those laws used to – the sodomy laws used to be in existence across the country. And I think it's atrocious. Reginald wants to have some equal time or something like that to talk about how great it will be. So I'll get to Reginald Wet Noodle from the – Republican Sex Crimes Division coming up here in the 5 o'clock hour. Brett, I think, is it Max Nesterick that's going to be joining him? He's got that article, in case you missed it. The workers were working on part of that complex out in Invergrove Heights with the Vikings and all this stuff, and apparently they weren't paid. And this is a big Vikings project, so there's a question there of who's responsible and will they get paid, and we'll talk about that. That's going to be with Brett coming up here in the 5 o'clock hour. Patrick, how are we today?
Doing good. We have our best weather of the year today and tomorrow, and I can't wait.
It is. Well, and then next week is going to be in the 80s, now they're saying. Is it still? I'll check here. But yeah, it's gorgeous out right now. And I went over Mother's Day. By the way, kids, if you'd forgotten, Mother's Day is coming up here on Sunday. You might be able to get yourself in. There might be still some reservations over at Park Tavern for the Mother's Day buffet. If you get the chance for that, it's fantastic. It's a great way to spend some time with mom. You can, of course, get your reservations, get an hour of bowling with that. Contact parktavern.net, parktavern.net for more information about that. Let's see. 71, 60-something, 79, 83, 83, 84 coming up next week. Definitely, we've taken that turn. I guess we decided to just skip the 50s. We don't need them. So today, I had to, because of, I'm running around tomorrow with I'm going to a Sheltie party. Which is exactly what it sounds. You know the Sheltie. You know what a Sheltie is, right, Patrick?
Yep.
The little dog that looks – it's a miniature version of a collie. But it's not a collie. It's its own breed of dog. It's not like they made miniature versions of collies. The collie was a cattle dog of the West, and that was a dog that had to take on coyotes. The Shetland sheepdog, or the Sheltie as they're called, they only had to take on foxes and basically Arctic foxes, so they never had to get as big. But they got fluffy. And so, yeah, they're adorable. I get to go to a Sheltie party tomorrow, which I'm looking forward to. And then I'm heading out to Woodbury. I'm going to be in you. Oh, I will. That's going to be happening on Saturday, Sunday. I got a soccer tournament out there, so I'll be out there for a little bit. I got to avoid all the road construction that's going on across the metro area. So I had to today run on out and get some, nice Mom's Day flower baskets. The kids, they trying to get them to coordinate something is next to impossible. So I just went and did it myself. They can take care of things afterwards. But holy God, the price of flower baskets has gone up just a little smidge. Just a little tiny bit. Holy God. So this is interesting. So my mom is down in South Carolina, and I called up a florist down there, and I'm just going to be honest. I said basically half the money I just spent on flowers for my wife to them, and they acted like I was the biggest client they've had all year. They're like, wow, all right, yeah, sure, we'll get that out. We'll VIP that. We'll take care of that, getting that right to the door. I'm like, well, okay, it's seems like a fairly reasonable amount of money. I wasn't trying to be Johnny, you know, Monopoly guy. But here it's like, oh yeah, here you go. Flowers are optional. What? I get baskets with no flowers. That's a lot of money. Oh God, it is. I know there's Republicans out there. Thanks, Joe Biden. Yeah, because Joe Biden's out there working in the greenhouse. No, it's the cost of everything. And, you know, it's one of the things I find is very interesting is you want to blame the president for private corporations and private companies charging more money for things. That's not how the whole system works. You got a problem with this. You got to look at the business structure. And I can think you can start with the oil companies, but that's just me. That's just me. Those greedy jackasses. That's just me. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I hope you do get a chance to get out and enjoy this. This is why we're here. And have you noticed, baby, the trees are making up for lost time? That, I mean, it's like in 3 days, the trees have gone from completely bare to now you can see the beginnings of leaves on all of them now.
Yeah, I got out of my car and I smelled lilac. I was like, where did those come from?
Really? Where? Here at the station?
No, back at my house.
Well, I'm going to come over there then. I was thinking about heading over to the Arboretum, trying to get over there and see the tulips. I have a bad feeling, considering it's going to get so warm here, that the tulips are not really going to have a season this year. That they're going to come in and they're going to roast it out here within 2 or 3 days. Hopefully they look nice. So get out. Hope you do enjoy it. Still, I'm going to just say on those dirt trails, make sure you're wearing boots that can get some mud on them until the things dry out completely. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Like I said, a lot to get to today. Let's start, though, with Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Once again, we're kind of in a little bit of a and today, by the way, a lot of people I know going to see Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. And that, I mean, it looks fantastic. It really looks good. I can't wait to, I'm looking forward to seeing that one myself. But the way I do it is, you know, especially one of these big movies, when it dies down somewhat at the box office, I'll go get that first Sunday morning showing. And it's great because usually there's some people in there. I mean, it still is a relatively popular film after 3-4 weeks. But it's generally you're in a row by yourself. You don't have someone behind you. Don't have someone in front of you. That's great. And so that's my plan. But considering I was looking at the movie release schedule, this is pretty much the one big movie that's being released until the Top Gun sequel. Which, did we really ask for that? Did you ask for the Top Gun sequel?
No, but to be fair, a lot of movie sequels, I go, I don't think anybody was asking for that.
Do we need a second helping of My Dinner with Andre? I don't think we do. I think we got enough the first time around. It was a long conversation. What are they going to call My Dinner with Andre 2 dessert? You know, is that what it's going to be? Come on, man. Anyway, that movie comes out later this month. But so Doctor Strange is going to basically rule the box office for a while here. I mean, if you want to go see it, you're going to go see it. If you don't want to wear a mask, you're not going to wear a mask. I don't know what else you can do, but I have a feeling within 3 weeks here, we're going to see a pretty good sized spike of Doctor Strange, you know, related COVID cases. We'll have to see. Friday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,345 newly reported cases, 4 newly reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 12,525. Through today's update includes case data that was reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Thursday. Through May 5th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 297. That's actually down 1 from May 4th. Of those hospitalized, 24 people in intensive care. That's down from 26. 273 people in non-ICU care. That's actually up from 272. As of May 4th, the state reported that 3,908,805 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,702,618 people have completed the vaccine series. There are 2,553,468 Minnesotans up to date with their vaccine shots. I will be as of Monday when I go over to the VA to get that taken care of. Total number of cases that's been reported, 1,463,955. The one thing that's really disturbing is that the world health experts all believe that the death count on COVID is probably grossly undercounted and could be easily be twice as much as it is. And that, dear Lord. But hey, heaven forbid anyone get in the way of you getting your Southwest-style egg rolls over at Chili's and dipping sauce. Got to get that dipping sauce in there, huh? Wow. Star Tribune, can I get one? Okay, I'll get to a little bit of a criticism of the Star Tribune here in a second. Four Twin Cities metro area counties are among 21 in Minnesota considered to be the at least a moderate COVID-19 risk based on local infection and hospitalization rates. Hennepin, Carver, Scott, and Washington counties were all listed at moderate risk for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, while indoor mask wearing was recommended in Pennington County in northwestern Minnesota because it's in the high-risk category, Pennington County. Any idea what's up in Pennington County that's that would be given that one that high? That's I know where that's at. That's up in the very northwestern part of the state. Canadians?
Maybe it's those Canadians.
I don't know. That's kind of a head-scratcher there. The latest CDC risk data matches wastewater sampling across Minnesota that's showing more evidence of the coronavirus that caused COVID-19. The Metropolitan Wastewater Treatment Center in St. Paul reported Friday 21% increase in the average viral load of sewage that was sampled over the past week. Boy, springtime in Minnesota, huh? Can I just say this, Star Tribune? If you are going to if you're going to do this, make sure. Why don't you just list? It's 21 counties. It's not the most. You already listed four. That means all you have to do is list the other 17 counties. Well, in Pennington, I'm going to put Pennington counties in there. So all you need is put the other 16 counties out there. You didn't put that in the story. That would be what I would consider to be news. I know, wacky, crazy, Matt, but I would consider that be news. You might want to put that in there. 952-946-6205. Wear a mask. I mean, I understand that some people are really, you know, I don't want to go back. I got to be honest. My wife is one of them. She is just a person that, you know, does not want to have to go back to that. She was, you know, just in staying inside. She wants to be done with it. And I have to kind of look at her and it's like, you know, you're going to the gym. You got to wear a mask. It's the gym, for goodness sakes. It was always – the gym's workout areas were always one of the worst places for contracting coronavirus. You can't all of a sudden expect that to be – I mean, be good. My God, even during the worst of the pandemic, there were still knuckleheads running around that place saying, I'm not going to wear a mask. I mean, dear Lord. You have to understand it. It is partially about you, but one of the things we heard from Dr. Joe yesterday, one of the things that is an important element of this discussion is that there are a lot of people running around who have zero symptoms, have no idea that they're sick. And they're running around without a mask in close quarters with a lot of other people. And so you may say to yourself, when you look at someone wearing a mask, and say, oh, well, look at them. They're just scared they're going to get sick. I actually look at it the other way. I don't want to be sick and make everyone around me sick. Henceforth, I'm wearing a mask when I go to the gym or I go to the grocery store or something like that. Because, yeah, that would be the – there are consequences for this stuff. I actually had there's a guy that he kind of a right-wing stooge. He was one of those guys that would wear MAGA hats, you know, for a while there. And he's at the gym, the Y I go to, and he was there, and he's like, why are you wearing a mask? Don't you know you don't have to anymore? So I took my mask off, and I said, well, that's great. You know, my daughter has COVID right now. I don't. I didn't test, but I didn't know if it was safe or not. But, you know, as long as you don't mind. And he goes, no, I didn't mean it like that. I was just saying I didn't know why you had it on, as he quickly moved away. I didn't take it off that much. It was still on my face for the most part. But, you know, his eyes got really wide when he realized, oh, maybe, just maybe, there are people out there who are courteous and kind and care for the rest of the people that are around them and don't want to get them sick in case I am asymptomatic and I have it. Just a thought. Get vaccinated. Wear a mask. Social distance. Get boosted. You know. It's not going to be over. And granted, so far, these variants that are coming out now seem to be just far more contagious than they are serious. Although, once again, Four people died yesterday. Four people died yesterday of COVID. Used to be 3 years ago. 3 years ago in this state, if four people died of something that this state would stop. And it's like, what's going on? Four people are dead. What do we have to do? Today it's like, they were going to die eventually of something anyway. Right, Dr. Jensen? Please. It's not just for you. It's for everyone else. You know, if you care about other people, until this latest surge, this uptick. How about I say it like that? I don't know if I want to necessarily use the kind of the inflammatory term of surge per se, but this uptick in cases until it starts going back down again, may I suggest a mask and some social distancing? May I? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Another story from the Minnesota Coronavirus Update when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. By the way, speaking of Dr. Joe, he sent me a picture. 4 hours of good sunshine up north, and everything is greening up real nice up on the ranch, up in the northern part of the state. So if you get a chance to get up there before too long, I bet it will be lovely. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. In mid-March, as COVID cases fell to some of the lowest levels in months, Governor Tim Walz touted plans for a COVID after-action report. The findings, which he said could be released by the end of the month, would serve as a playbook for future administrations and future Minnesotans on how to respond in future waves. But after Axios followed up and asked for an update or a copy of the report, aides walked back the claims that there isn't a specific document. Work to review the state's COVID response and prepare for a future surge is ongoing, Walz Press Secretary Claire Lancaster wrote in an email. State agencies are consistently assessing what has worked and what hasn't. This is an ongoing process rather than a specific document. It's not the first time the governor has had to revise the on-record comments. In the days following George Floyd's murder, he falsely claimed that 80% of protesters were from out of state. Walz's allies, the governor himself, have downplayed premature false statements of the DFL. By the way, as you want to bring that up, I want to remind people that pretty much almost everyone who has been arrested and charged with a crime involved with the uprising after George Floyd, not from Minneapolis, St. Paul. No, from outstate Minnesota and out of the state itself. A lot of them are. And so you want to give them a lot of grief on that. I think that there was far more people in this town that weren't from this town that was going on. No, those people were being attacked by the police, in case you haven't seen the Stallings video. Still waiting. Tick-tock goes the clock in regards to the Minneapolis Police Department and holding any of those officers. Okay, for God's sakes. Oh, Lord. All right, 952-946-6205. I think we have to look at this as the first wave of a new cycle. It was interesting. I read an article a few weeks back that was talking about how the thing that we have to just go back. In 2014, during the midterm elections, the Republicans ran with that Ebola story. And remember that. I mean, that was Ebola. It's going to kill you all. That was kind of the narrative. Now, back then, no one was saying, oh, let's not take this seriously. No one was saying, I'm doing my own research. No one was saying, oh God, you want to put a mask on me? How dare you? No one was. Everyone was like, oh my God, we're scared. Right? That was kind of the mentality of it. And people were, even if it came out and people were like, okay, no, the chances of there being a major outbreak is slim to none. It's not how this disease works. It didn't matter. You had some states demand hospitals open up, Ebola clinics in the parking lots to deal with what they were guaranteeing. I was thinking of specifically out in New Jersey they were basically saying you better open up your emergency, prep hospital for all the Ebola cases that are about to come on in there. Christie was vehement on that. And so they did. And, of course, I think there was a total of four cases in the country, total of four. that were there. But no one sat back and said, this is not true. This is Ebola's a myth. And the article brought forth the idea and the concept, which is this whole thing. And reminder, what we have to remember is this. Donald Trump manipulated the crap out of his followers by using the pandemic as a bellwether to whatever the case may be. Reminder, before Joe Biden took office, a lot of Republicans were like, we need to give Donald Trump every bit of credit for the vaccine. Do you know how many people that Donald Trump specifically saved himself? It was he's a saint. Put him on a church. You know, that was kind of the mentality. And the same exact people, the minute that Joe Biden came into office, was, oh, that vaccine that was developed by Trump, sure, but it's not. You can't trust it. It's going to make you have space laser eyes and green blood. You're going to be a lizard man. You're magnetized. They're going to be able to track you. Let me post about that on my cell phone. You know, no, they were just fools. It was the medical professionals, the medical industry, science became the enemy to these people. And they just – and it wasn't – I mean, they all said, well, I'm doing my own research. Well, how's that done for you there, Dr. Bombay? Tell me, I mean, is your house full of beakers and test tubes and you're kind of looking through things and putting them into spinning machines and figuring out what exactly is going on? Or when you say that, all are you doing is just going to get Tucker Carlson's talking points on the issue and repeating them verbatim and saying, research! Because it sounds like that's all you really did, which goes back to the fact that your entire frustration and anger at all this was unfounded. It was because Donald Trump needed a villain and he was not in office. And look at how the Republicans, my God, how many Republicans are on the record saying vaccines don't work? A lot of them. Trust me. If I'm the DFL right now, I am scouring every small town in this state. And I am going and looking for everyone, because these guys, when they might have put out their press releases saying, people have the right to get vaccinated, but I don't agree with it. When you went out and saw these guys in town halls and at their rallies, a lot of them were coming on out and saying outright, don't get vaccinated. It's all a myth. Governor Walz wants to control you. That's all it is. And so this article that I read about this said the theory that they have is that we could end up having another disease, maybe a different variant of COVID or another disease come down the line and wipe out a substantial part of the population. And the people that they will watch all their family members die of this disease, and they'll sit there and saying, the scientists are all wrong. Tucker Carlson told me there is nothing there, that all my family are crisis actors. They're going to be back anytime soon. That's the crazy part. And this actually has happened before. There's always been these revolts against science and technology. And a lot of times it was a large institution that wanted to vilify something to basically get their followers in line. Can I talk about the Catholic Church? My goodness. This is something that's happened. And here you go. We are just in the latest example. Although, when you think about 2014 and Ebola, and you think about the 50s and 60s, and vaccines came on out, and I mean, really, everyone got vaccinated, and the only people that didn't were the real religious protesters, not the ones that are saying, well, I've been vaccinated for rubella and mumps and chicken pox. I've been vaccinated for all that. I get a flu shot every year, but you're not going to give me that because Jesus said specifically not to get the COVID vaccine. It's in there somewhere. Trust me. I've done my own research. The only people that didn't were the real religious protesters on that. So this is the part which I think that I hope that Governor Walz has a plan. But I got to admit, any plan that comes on out of his office or any state government office or even out of the president's office, a part of this is going to have to include, well, there's about a third of the country that are basically going to believe you're lying about it if it does happen, if you're a Democrat. They'll scream it's the biggest crisis in the history of mankind if it's a Republican. But if it's a Democrat, they're going to scream it's a false flag operation. It doesn't exist, even as they are all dying off in mass. So you figure out some way to get around that little gem. Good luck. And that's the way we're at today. That's the world we're in today. Wear a mask. Get vaccinated. I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. I don't want you bankrupt. And I don't want you having long COVID. I don't. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When we do come back, I want to break down a little bit more about the fight against chronic wasting disease in the deer population. And is Jeremy Miller, potentially the Senate Majority Leader, jeopardizing all deer hunting and the deer herds of Minnesota for his own personal private businesses? We'll get to that here in a second. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. You know the date is... AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We have, of course, had numerous people on with us. Representative Rick Hansen has been on with us. Representative Jamie Becker Finn has been on with us. We have talked about chronic wasting disease. And it's a disease that's going through the deer right now, and it's very dangerous, and it's very lethal. It's something that a diseased deer, I mean, as of right now, we don't know of any cases where CWD has crossed over to humans, but obviously there is a concern there that something like that could happen. You don't want to, you definitely don't want to eat it or anything like that. You want to be very careful with the CWD. And it's something that, it like I said, it's wildly contractible within the deer population. And the threat we have here is not is a no-brainer. And once again, I'm not here to have a discussion about the validity of deer hunting. I've seen places where they've cut back on that and the deer population has become so bad. I'd rather have a responsible hunting season than, 40 more deer car crashes a night in the state where, that's a pretty rough way to go for the deer too, just FYI. So, I'm not here to talk about that. We have deer hunting is a wildly popular activity in the state of Minnesota. I've lived in northern Minnesota. My God, if you've ever been in Minnesota around deer hunting season, northern Minnesota, holy God, those towns come to life. Little widenings of the road up in northern Minnesota all of a sudden become, almost major metropolitan areas overnight, as people pour into the community to go deer hunting and have some fun in northern Minnesota. It really is something that is important, and it is a big revenue generator for the state. It's a huge revenue generator for the state. So henceforth, I don't know if we really want to jeopardize it. There is a problem here, and a lot of chronic wasting disease right now that's reported in the state has been reported around deer farms. Now, this is not a major issue. This is not... deer farming goes, it's not a major element of the farming community. It really isn't. It's a relatively small, narrow niche kind of farming. And we're not talking about wheat. We're not talking about pork. We're not talking about turkeys. We're not talking about beef cattle. We're not talking about corn. We're talking about, farmed deer. It's a relatively small part of the state's deer or the state's agricultural picture. Okay. No one is saying we shut down all the deer farms. No one is saying that, but we do want to put in some common sense regulations. And reading from the story here from the Minnesota Reformer, during a recent debate on agricultural bill, Senator Carla Bingham, the DFLer from Cottage Grove, actually got 5 votes from GOP colleagues to amend a bill, impose regulations on deer farms to combat CWD, chronic wasting disease, including a moratorium on new operations. It was an unusual show of bipartisan support for a DFL-led amendment in the GOP-controlled Senate, illustrating the deep concern many hunters and their allies in the legislature have about the disease that threatens the deer population. After the amendment passed, however, the Senate recessed at the urging of Majority Leader Jeremy Miller. When they returned, they watered down Bingham's amendment. What Miller didn't say on the Senate floor, his brother Todd is one owner of a deer farm and a hunting preserve in Winona called Epic Antler Ranch, which bills itself as Minnesota's number one whitetail hunting destination. No. Hunts are offered between September and December on a high-fenced preserve, according to the website. Hunters are provided an opportunity to harvest the buck of a lifetime. Wow, buck you. Because of his family ties, I said it correctly. I took a pause there. I said it correctly. Because of his family ties, Miller should have recused himself from the vote, said Senate Majority Minority Leader Melissa Franson, the DFL from Medina, in a statement after Bingham's amendment was watered down. Senator Miller needs to explain why he didn't recuse himself on the vote and to clarify his relationship to the deer farming industry and what interest he had in interrupting the Senate proceedings on an important bill. So once again, the amendment passed. So frantically, Miller calls time. No, not time. Caucus, all meet over here. And I imagine it was, my guess is it was something like this. What do you mean you guys agreed with the Democrat? What do you mean you did that? You're not supposed to do that. You can't do this. We gotta go get rid of that amendment. Now, once again, all we're talking about is trying to save the deer hunting seasons in Minnesota. That's all we're talking about. That minor little problem, which you would think across the board would be the biggest freaking no-brainer of all time. It really is remarkable that this is this difficult for the Republicans. But what I think you're seeing is there are conflicts of interest here, which are – and I got to tell you the truth. Even if my brother was, Johnny Deer Farm here, where you can come on out here and get the monster buck, I would look at him and say, well, wouldn't you rather be safe about this whole thing? I'd rather be safe. I don't want to have to explain to, especially up in northern Minnesota, while we're jeopardizing the deer populations across the state. As of now, there appears to be no plans on the Senate DFL to launch a formal ethics complaint, though. A spokeswoman for Miller said in a statement, Miller has many business interests. Deer farming isn't one of them, she said. He has no financial stake in his brother's farm. That would have been disclosed in his economic interest form. It's not a conflict of interest. Then why the hell did he frantically, time, okay, guys, all meet over here. Why did he do that? Seriously, why did he do that? If this wasn't something he was... There sure seems to be a conflict. Sally Jo Sorensen, who writes on Blue Stem Prairie News Blog, first reported the close ties between the Miller family businesses, noting that the address for Epic Antler Farm shows the land was purchased by the Miller family's scrap metal yard business in 2006, according to the property records database. Jeremy Miller is the chief financial officer for the scrap metal business. So, once again, in the business he has nothing to do with, he, as the CFO of his company, the company bought the land which the deer farm is on right now. Guys, really sounding conflict of interest-y at this point. Miller and his family have a number of businesses in Winona. The family has long owned a scrap metal yard. Most recently, Miller and his wife opened a restaurant. They own a hat company that sends a portion of proceeds to unhoused veterans. In an email, Todd Miller said Epic Antler Ranch is his business and a main source of income. I'm opposed to the deer farm moratorium because it would essentially shut down the entire industry and completely eliminate many people's livelihoods in Minnesota. It's unnecessary, would not resolve the CWD issue, referring to chronic wasting disease. Isn't that convenient? Don't try to stop the spread of chronic wasting disease because I, a deer farmer, have determined you're not going to stop it anyway. It's going to wipe out the population. So we might as well just keep going ahead with this and be done with it anyway. How convenient of an argument for you to make. He added, Jeremy is involved in several different endeavors, but deer farming is not one of them. He has no ownership or involvement in my business. Well, outside of the fact that the scrap metal business bought the land that you are on, I mean, that little hiccup, speed bump, all that stuff. Ethics. Okay. And by the way, how ready was that guy with the deer farming is the most sacred kind of farming in America kind of esque type of argument that he made there? I'm opposed to the deer farm amendment because it would essentially shut down an entire industry and completely eliminate many people's livelihoods in Minnesota. It's a handful of people. A handful of people would not be shut down. It just wouldn't be able to expand it. And they would have to take some precautions to prevent CWD from getting out there. But as he says, it won't resolve it. It's not going to resolve anything. I mean, I got to tell you, if you're a deer farmer, or if you're a deer hunter, not a deer farmer, if you're a deer hunter, I don't care what your is an R or D next to your name. These guys are jeopardizing the entire state's deer hunt. It's scary how much this to me just shows me how even a fringe industry can get control of the Republican Party and dictate what they want versus what's best for Minnesota. Todd Miller also serves as vice president of the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association. According to a nonprofit's most recent 990 IRS tax filing, he's been active in helping shape state rules on deer farming, giving testimony to the Board of Animal Health. During a January 2021 meeting, Todd Miller said that his deer farm had been quarantined and that his business could not function, according to meeting minutes. He said 40 of his animals had been tested and not found to have CWD. Minnesota lawmakers who are part-time legislators often have business or occupations that are intertwined with legislation and regulation. Insurance and real estates are common ones. Professions and public employees like teachers as well. Lawmakers are required to file statements of economic interest with the Minnesota Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board outlining any source of income, securities, or business interests as well. Miller's economic interest form does not list any deer farm operations. That's Jeremy Miller's there. The state Senate has in the past reprimanded members for taking actions that appear to benefit them but did not constitute a direct conflict of interest. For instance, former state senator Stavir Chaudhry of Fridley in 2010 amended legislation as a committee chair that would have boosted walleye in a lake where he owned a cabin. Then Governor Tim Pawlenty vetoed the bill in part because of the change. Under oath, he argued the Senate's Ethics Subcommittee that the conservative measure would benefit all Minnesotans. The fallout resulted in a DFL primary challenger, and Barbara Goodwin won that seat. Senator Bill Ingebritsen, Republican from Alexandria, told NPR News at the time of that episode, highlighted that lawmakers must hold themselves to a higher standard or risk losing the confidence of the public. You have an absolute jump up and take the soap scrubber and wash yourself totally clean of moving forward with anything. Well, unless you're a Republican, because, like I said, family business seems to have bought the land that deer farm's on. And I also want to just kind of get – it's his brother. Okay. Your argument is that the brother has never once talked to the Senate Majority Leader – about his wishes on this bill? Is that what you're saying? Because the argument you're making is that there is no conflict of interest here. Well, the only way I could see that happening is if the brother says, hey, you know what? I don't want to cross interest here. I have someone who is an assistant of mine I'm not your brother, that if you want to talk to them, you can, but we can't talk. Because that would seem to me a conflict of interest. Senator Andrew Lang, Republican of Olivia, who has been leading the issue of chronic wasting disease at the deer, said in an interview he did not see a conflict of interest of anything improper with Jeremy Miller's. Of course, no, that conflict of interest stuff only matters if it's a DFLer. I would say he probably talked to his brother more about deer farming than he talks to his own brother about deer farming. He said that the state GOP is not in favor of a moratorium on new farms, calling the proposal too restrictive. So once again, it's not saying we're shutting down farms. It's that we're going to restrict farms. There's a lot of blame going around to these deer farmers like they're a problem for CWD. Well, considering a lot of the outbreaks for CWD are around deer farms, yeah, it is. Holy God. Miller's family ties to deer farming has attracted the attention of conservationists. Brad Gausman, executive director of the Minnesota Conservative Federation and member of the recently formed CWD Action Committee, told Minnesota Outdoor News that Miller's actions were inappropriate, Miller has power to over decision-making in terms of oversight of captive deer farming industry that has family member that can be a benefactor to his actions. I will tell you this, where this is going to come on down is when we get to deer hunting season. Because I can tell you right now, if in outstate Minnesota where these Republicans are at, if we end up getting to a point where, you're not going to be able to take the deer anymore because there's chronic wasting disease throughout the state, I guarantee you Republicans are going to be looking at it and say, well, why are we protecting deer farmers at this point when the entire hunting industry is on the line? The Minnesota Deer Hunters Association estimates deer hunting generates $1.3 billion in economic activity. And they themselves have called for a number of steps to curtail CWD, including the moratorium on new deer farms and voluntary buyouts of deer farms. Bingham, in an interview, the DFLer accused the GOP-led Senate of doing little to combat CWD and has urged his colleagues to match the House DFL position. You're looking at fewer than 200 deer farmers compared to 500,000 deer hunters, Bingham says. The House always brings a strong bill, she said, hoping her amendment would make it into the conference committee where the differences in the House and Senate versions could be hammered out. We need to address this. Well, of course you do. Can I be honest? If we have a disease we can prevent from spreading through the deer population, okay, I'm for that. I don't think we need to necessarily cause the deer to unnecessarily suffer. I don't think that that's a good thing. And once again, these deer farms, this is where they're finding outbreaks of CWD right around them, whether in the herd on the farm or on deer that are near the farm. I can already see this because no one's going to go back to Todd Miller, Jeremy Miller's brother. No one's going to go back to him and make the argument that, hey, wait a second here. Didn't you say, where did he say it here? I'm opposed to deer moratorium because it would be essentially shut down the entire industry to completely eliminate many people's livelihoods. It's unnecessary, would not resolve the CWD issue. I mean, he's banking on chronic wasting disease not becoming a massive problem here. I'm sure he's already ready. Well, go, that just happened naturally. That wasn't the deer farmers. Why are you getting so mad at me? Sour grapes. That's all he's going to scream. I mean, it's like saying to you, I mean, how stupid are you guys in the Republican Party? I'm dead serious. How stupid are you? Can't you see this? This cab's coming down the street with its doors wide open, three blocks down the way. Now, whether or not Jeremy Miller has a conflict of interest, I mean, he sure seems to, but, whatever the legal definition is, that remains to be seen. But I would say this, if you care about Minnesotans, then you're not just caring about your brother's issues. You're caring about, the deer hunters' issues, which last time I checked outnumber deer farmers quite a bit. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. Speaking of outstate Minnesota, let's go up to the town of Ely. I love going up to Ely. Although, I mean, I will say this. Ely has the Blueberry Festival every year. And when I was a kid, I had one of the best blueberry pies I've ever had in my entire life in Ely. And I'm like, wow. And now you go up there for Blueberry Festival, you barely find the blueberries. That's kind of a ripoff. I've always said this about summer activities. You've heard me say this for years. If you're going to be something like Blueberry Festival, then it should be like, Caligula with blueberries. I mean, that's what it should be like. Everywhere, like people throwing, that, open your mouth, here you go, delicious, isn't it? Ah, that'd be me. Oh, man. I love that. Still, I still like going to Ely. It's actually one of my favorite places up north. I think that it's such a unique town because it's been somewhat thriving, and now all of a sudden a fellow radio station up there is actually going through some trouble. The Ely radio station, known for calling high school Nordic ski meets live and acts as a weather lifeline for area paddlers, also was owned by Charles Kuralt. I did not know that. Is set to leave the air on June 1st. WELY, owned by the Bosfort Band of Chippewa, has been a losing venture The band said in a press release, "We've been working hard to the scenes to find a buyer that could continue operating the station, but our latest plans fell through," said Tribal Chair Kathy Chavers in a release. "This is not something we wanted to do." And I know, and not a lot of people up there, that's not what you want to have happen. Not all hope is lost. Ely Mayor Roger Scraba. God, that's such a northern Minnesota name. S-K-R-A-B-A. Scraba. There you go. He's attempting a last-minute save, combining public and private interests. Some are saying, hey, it's the end of the line, but I'm not ready to give it up yet. It's known for the end-of-the-road radio. First began broadcasting in 1954. Financial problems forced the closure in 1987. Until CBS journalist Charles Krault, known for On the Road program, bought the station in 1995. He operated it until his 1997 death. The tribe bought it, the WELY, in 2005. The station employs a full-time general manager and 8 part-time workers. I would say this. I've often thought about that, man. I have. I love Minnesota. I've thought about buying a radio station out there, something like that. And all you have to do, you know, Patrick, you know, I you know this. You cover the football. You cover the basketball. You cover the hockey. Maybe a few baseball games come springtime. You do your high school sports package up there. Those are money makers, man.
Absolutely.
Oh, you can make it. If you do it right now, the question I have is, and I don't know if you know this, there's the Ely High School, right?
Yeah.
And I've been, that's a nice field. They got a nice baseball field up there. We were at a tournament up there once. Is there another high school that's near that?
I don't know. You might have to go west on 169 a little ways.
Tower Sutton over that way?
Yeah.
By Vermillion? Maybe. Yeah, I hope they can find someone. I mean, this is not a mystery. This industry, radio industry, it's in the day of the internet. It's, you know, look at us. I'm live streaming this. We podcast everything. That's what you have to do. And where we are able to do this in Minneapolis, St. Paul, you know, small stations, not as much. And so it will be a loss, especially for all those people that go up there, because that's kind of the part of the nature of it all. So I hope they do find someone up there, because I do believe in Minnesota radio, hands down. Hour 2 of the show, that's coming up next. Hour 2 of the show on a Friday here. Matt and Patrick, it's the Matt McNeil Show. Good news, good news for us, Patrick. We, of course, last night, Carlos Correa got beamed twice by Baltimore. He did not fracture his middle finger, though. He did not fracture that. He's considered now day-to-day, but it had to hurt. Ugh. I was a little upset they lost two. They split that series with Baltimore. That's not a good Baltimore team.
No, I was kind of upset about that too, especially the way it, you know, went down. That, you know, the Twins would, you know, do something good, but Baltimore had an answer every time, and that's kind of, you know, not what you want to happen with a team like that.
So we have another. So the Twins are in town with Oakland today, right?
Yep, that's cool. Another team that the Twins should just beat up.
What a gorgeous night to go downtown. Oh man, I might have to go down there. Wild are at the Blues tonight. Another 8:30 start time. So I hope you can stay. Well, it's a Friday night. You can stay up a little bit later. The good news is, it sounds like, isn't the Sunday game is a 3 o'clock start time.
Yep, 3 o'clock Sunday. Bad news, game 5, 8:30 on Tuesday night.
Well, of course they're going to be, because this is how they're doing. They're doing the 4 games, unless the 2 Eastern Conference series that are playing on the same nights as us end early, all of our games are going to be late. But if they do, I mean, if you can always hope. If you say there's a 4-game series sweep on the 2 East Coast ones, they'll have to start our game early, because they can't take the West Coast game and put it out there early.
Yeah, because that would probably be a 7 and 9:30 with Los Angeles and Edmonton.
We can always hope, because I don't like waking up so late. Speaking of sports, here's how about this great bit of news. Tim Walz announced today the Twin Cities will host the 2026 Special Olympics USA Games. Walz made the announcement at a news conference at Huntington Bank Stadium. Walz says it will be a single largest sporting event ever to take place in the U.S. in 2026, and will showcase the state's commitment to inclusion that every single person can thrive. So how cool is that?
Looking forward to that, definitely.
That's going to bring a lot of people in town, man. This town's going to be packed in 2026 with that one. Moving away from that. Sometimes, Patrick, there's bad luck, and then there's, I shouldn't even try. It's things are going to go bad for you, right? That is the story that I was, A motorcyclist was unfortunately killed in a crash in Minneapolis just moments after another crash in which he struck a Metro Transit bus. Now, we're talking a motorcyclist, okay? Minneapolis Police Department investigators say it received a report of a crash between a motorcycle and a bus at 32nd Street East and Minnehaha Avenue in South Minneapolis just after 8 p.m. So that's that's way over. That's kind of over by Northern Sun, isn't it?
Yeah,
32nd. Yeah, it's over by Northern Sun in Minnehaha. Yeah. Over off Lake Street there. That's getting pretty close, a few blocks south of it. Officers found the bus was damaged. Ow! But nobody was injured. There was no sign of a motorcycle at the crash scene. Well, I'm going to take a guess that the motorcyclist was a little injured after hitting a bus. I can't comprehend that how you didn't. It sounds like he left the scene because, obviously, if he was in the wrong, you know, you'd have to, you know, be responsible for fixing the bus. It's emerging, though, that the motorcyclist struck the bus, rode away, getting to 35th Street East in Minnehaha, so three blocks south, where he ran a red light and then struck a passenger vehicle. Ow. Ow. The motorcyclist, a man in his late 50s, was treated at the scene before taking to the hospital where he passed away. The man's identity will be released later by the Hennepin County Medical Examiner. There have been 86 deaths on Minnesota roads so far in 2022. I gotta believe he injured himself pretty bad on both of those. The human body is fairly fragile. This is why every single year I try to do a bit of a public service, and I come on out and I'll say, you know, keep an eye out for motorcycles. Okay, do that, please. Keep an eye out for motorcycles. But the reality is that the As something like this happens, and the reason why is if he hit a bus, even if he was only going like 10 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour, that's going to leave a mark, man. It doesn't say if he was wearing a helmet. Ugh.
The fact that you can slam into a bus, get up, and drive away in any regard, that's something.
Well, then he hits the other car, broadsides the other car. God, man. Not on my list of ways to go on that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So, Max Nesterak, in case you hadn't seen this story has been going around. The Minnesota Reformer, I think, was the one that broke this story, though. This is the Minnesota Vikings. They've got this whole big facility down in Invergrove Heights. A lot of other buildings and stuff and developments going up around it. Well, apparently, there are some construction crews that have been working down there. They didn't get paid. And that's a little bit of a problem there. It's a story Minnesota Reformer had. Brett Johnson talks with Max right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Friday afternoon. Well, today we are going to be talking about what union leaders in the state say could be one of the largest alleged wage theft cases in state history. And this has to do with the Minnesota Vikings and their planned redevelopment taking place by their new Eagan headquarters. Basically, what they're doing, among other things, is building some new luxury apartments. And this luxury apartment building, or buildings I should say that are being built, are called Vikings Lakes. Now, the Minnesota Vikings, of course, hired contractors and subcontractors to help with the project. And two of those subcontractors are called Absolute Drywall and Property Maintenance and Construction. And they are among the companies that are accused of wage theft. Now, they primarily hired workers who are immigrants from Latino countries. And the workers that they hired helped hang drywall and install siding on the apartments. But now they say they are owed over $100,000 in wages. So joining us now to talk more about this story is Max Nesterak. He is the deputy editor of the Minnesota Reformer and reports on labor and housing. Max, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Always happy to be here.
Absolutely. So tell us about some of these stories that we've been hearing from workers who say they've been experiencing, well, not getting paid for the work that they've been doing on this Vikings luxury apartment complex.
right? So dozens of workers have come forward and said, you know, while hanging drywall and installing siding on these luxury apartments in Eagan, were not paid all that they were owed. Wage theft is incredibly common in the non-unionized sector of the construction industry. You see it happen a few different ways, not getting paid time and a half for overtime, getting called a subcontractor and not getting paid overtime at all, getting paid in cash, getting, you know, mysterious fees deducted from their paycheck. So these are things that happen in the non-unionized construction sector relatively frequently. And this is, you know, and so the workers on the Viking Lakes project, some of them say they're still owed, you know, more than $100,000. And, you know, they say they filed complaints with the State Department of Labor and Industry in hopes of being made whole and making sure other contractors don't do this sort of thing.
And a lot of times in these types of cases, especially when we are talking about immigrant workers, they often don't press the matters on these types of things when they are owed a lot of money. So if someone's sitting there thinking, well, why didn't they press this earlier? Well, oftentimes it's very tough as an immigrant to be able to try to hold their employers accountable. They'll think, well, I'll get in trouble or I don't have the means, and they therefore, well, don't try to hold their employers accountable.
Well, that's 100% true. You know, the main subject of the story that I published on MinnesotaReformer.com was Guillermo Macario Alcocer, and he was hired to be a cleanup guy on Viking Lakes, but also projects around the state for Absolute Drywall. He said at first he was offered $15 an hour, and then later was told he was given a raise to $18 an hour and then $20 an hour. But he said his checks always stayed about the same. You know, I reviewed about 3 months of his pay stubs, and what it looks like is that as his pay increased or his hourly rate increased, the number of hours that he reportedly worked decreased. He said he never worked less than 50 hours a week, but the pay stub says on 1 week that he would just worked about less than 20 hours. You know, Guillermo is an immigrant and he can't read, and that makes him especially vulnerable. You know, when he gets a pay stub, he he can't read it. He knows how much is in his bank account and he knows it's not going up. And so he brought it to, the employer and said, you know, hey, why am I not getting paid more? And he said he was told, well, when wages go up, taxes go up. And, you know, another reason why he didn't want to press the matter is because, you know, he had mostly worked in restaurants and construction promises to have higher wages. And so he thought, you know, if I just stick with it, if I pay my dues here, if I, you know, put up with maybe not making so much now, down the road, I'm going to be making more. And so that's kind of why he endured he says he's owed, you know, thousands of dollars. But, you know, that's why he says he stuck with it. You know, he hoped that he would get paid more down the line.
So just a few years ago, Minnesota did pass a new wage theft law. I'm curious about how that might impact this case, because as I understand it, no one's really, well, pressed anything in terms of this new wage theft law that we had passed in Minnesota. So could this be one of the first cases we see where we try to, well, test to see how this new wage theft law works?
You know, I am really interested to see if this case is taken up by criminal investigators and criminal prosecutors, because in 2019, a bipartisan group of lawmakers and Governor Tim Walz passed a bill that made wage theft in excess of $1,000 a felony. You can serve jail time in Minnesota for wage theft. And the goal behind this was to treat theft like other forms of theft. If an employee steals money out of the register, or if, you know, someone steals a car or steals a purse, that person can go to jail. It wasn't that way with wage theft. It was considered a civil matter. If you experience wage theft, you should sue your employer and go to court and hopefully get your wages back. Now, that puts a lot of onus on the workers to do all the investigation, to come up with the evidence. And this law made it a felony. But the problem with the law is that there's not much investigatory power to criminally investigate wage theft claims. So it would fall on police or sheriffs to investigate wage theft, but police are not, it's not in their wheelhouse to do these complicated white-collar criminal investigations with people with many Spanish speaking people, cases that are really complicated and can take months to do. It's just not something that your average police officer or police department can do. And so that's, I think, part of the reason why labor experts and even state officials say we haven't seen any criminal charges for wage theft since it was made a felony in 2019.
So what will happen with the workers? Are they going to try to challenge this wage theft under this law, or are they going to be getting groups or help from groups such as unions to try to press the matter? I am curious about that aspect in terms of what the workers are going to be doing to try to get their money back that they say they're owed.
Right. So you brought up the unions, and that's a good point to mention, because the workers were organized largely with the Carpenters Union. And the Carpenters Union, and these workers are not unionized, but the Carpenters Union says they have a motivation to help these workers, not just because they're interested in improving conditions for all workers, but because when subcontractors underbid them and do so through, you know, labor violations, it makes it difficult for union contractors to compete. And so in this way, the carpenters are organizing the workers to bring their complaints forward in an effort to crack down on subcontractors who can underbid their work. Now, what's happening now, the workers have filed a complaint, with the Department of Labor and Industry. The Department of Labor and Industry will not confirm that they're doing an investigation. They do civil investigations. Again, this gets in the weeds really quickly, but a civil investigation is different than a criminal investigation. And so they'll do that investigation. And when it's complete, they can turn that over to a criminal investigation, who would, review their work and maybe have to retrace some of their steps in order to bring charges against, someone in this matter if they find, if there was a intention to defraud, as well as wage theft. And so there is kind of a high bar in proving wage theft.
Speaking with Max Nesterak, he is the deputy editor of the Minnesota Reformer and reports on labor and housing. Make sure you go to MinnesotaReformer.com for the latest, not just on this piece that we're talking about with the Minnesota Vikings being involved in this alleged wage theft case when they hired a subcontractor to help with their new luxury apartments that they're building by their new Eagan headquarters. But for lots of other great stories, make sure you go to MinnesotaReformer.com. I want to focus a little bit now on this subcontractor Absolute Drywall, because as I was reading through your article, they certainly have quite the checkered history when it comes to wage theft problems and, well, labor problems overall, which we can get into. But the part that interests me is that the Vikings were apparently warned about the issues that companies like Absolute Drywall have, as the union warned them about this, saying, well, that's why they're underbidding, well, companies that do provide union-type labor. So I'm curious if the Vikings could face any sort of liability in that aspect, being that they hired a subcontractor who's being accused of wage theft, and that the Vikings were made aware ahead of time that this is possibly going to be an issue if they hire this subcontractor that does have a history of wage theft.
That's a really good question. And, you know, just to mention some of that checker, get into the specifics of that checkered path. Absolute Drywall has faced multiple citations from state and federal authorities for labor violations. They include having to pay workers $100,000 in back wages. They include misclassifying workers as subcontractors when they were really employees. It includes employing a 14-year-old who worked more than 50 hours a week doing drywall work, which is a violation of child labor laws. It's important to note that there were no penalties in any of those cases, which I think illustrates kind of just how rare it is for employers to face consequences for wage theft and other labor abuses. Now, the Vikings have said they are unaware of any wrongdoing, and that if it's true that these workers experienced wage theft, then the subcontractors that they hired will have had violated their contract. So the Minnesota Vikings, very well may not be liable for anything. They could have knowingly hired a subcontractor that has a checkered past, but that doesn't mean that they we're supposed to know that was happening on the job site, that doesn't mean that, at least from a legal standpoint, doesn't mean that they're going to be liable either criminally or civilly. Now, when the Carpenters Union held a press conference yesterday at the Capitol, one of the union leaders said, while we're not saying they're legally liable for what happened, we believe that they're morally accountable because they had every reason to, they could have known, they could have agreed to have an independent monitor come on the job site and talk to workers and make sure they weren't being exploited. So they say the Vikings had the opportunity to make sure that this didn't happen and therefore are morally accountable for what the workers say they experienced.
So basically, overall, even given Minnesota's new wage theft law, it's very unlikely the Vikings are going to at least be held legally accountable for what happened with this case if it does end up being shown and officially proven in court that this company, Absolute Drywall, did commit wage theft. It sounds like the Vikings would largely be able to escape, as you said, legal liability, but maybe not necessarily in terms of the court of public opinion.
I think that's exactly right.
So what are the contractors and subcontractors saying in response, specifically focusing on Absolute Drywall, but some of these other companies as well, as they've been contacted about this case of wage theft? What have they been saying in response to these allegations?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. I definitely want to get in their side of the story. You know, I wasn't able to reach the owner of Absolute Drywall, having tried to contact him multiple times. I was able to connect with a man who was previously an accountant for the company who would not, you know, give me his name on the record. But he said he denied that anything like that would have happened and said, you know, they always paid people for the hours that they worked and always paid overtime and everything was above board. And he said this was basically just sour grapes by the union trying to, you know, stir up controversy because they're mad that they didn't get the contract on the Vikings project. I talked to the owner of Advantage Construction, which subcontracted their work out to property maintenance and construction. He said he was aware that there might be an inquiry, but wasn't aware of any wrongdoing. He also said he didn't have anybody on payroll on the site because he subcontracted it all out to property maintenance and construction. I talked to the owner of property maintenance and construction. He denied knowing anything, even about an investigation. So on the whole, the subcontractors are saying, you know, it's we don't know about an investigation. We don't know about any wrongdoing.
So essentially everyone's saying, well, we didn't know of anything happening. And everyone's largely saying, well, we don't know what happened. No one's taking any blame. So I imagine, well, we're going to have to follow along what happens in possible court proceedings, being that, well, largely the contractors and the subcontractors and even the Vikings themselves are being relatively quiet on the matter, at least so far.
That's right. Yeah. You know, one thing that was interesting is that the Vikings say that, again, they came out and they said we're supportive of the investigation from the Department of Labor and Industry, and we'll wait and see what they say. And if there were violations, and this was, you know, that the subcontractors we hired violated our contract with them, saying they would abide by all labor laws.
We have been speaking with Max Nestorak. He is the deputy editor of the Minnesota Reformer, who reports on labor and housing, talking about wage theft allegations with this Viking subcontractor working on their redevelopment plans in Eagan. Title of the article is Workers on Vikings Development Claim Over $100,000 in Wage Theft. Make sure you find that over at MinnesotaReformer.com. That's MinnesotaReformer.com. Max, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you for having me on. I always appreciate talking to you.
All right, let's take a break and send things back to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Programming here brought to you by Todd Collett. He is a longtime listener of the station. He lives over in Spain, wants to help support the station, so he does. And he's doing a lot of supporting over there right now as things have gone pretty rough over in Kyiv. He's got a friend, Paul Nyland, who is running Lifeline Ukraine. It's a mental health and suicide prevention hotline in Kyiv for Ukrainians. And as you can imagine, once again, the demand that they're for their services is high. And at the same time, they are under assault as it goes. I mean, I can imagine some parts of that, the country there, they can't even get a phone call into them. So it's a lot of things they're having to work through. They're looking for donations. If you can make a donation to help out Lifeline in Ukraine, please do. They've told me a 1,500 UAH is about $50. So if you can make a donation, Lifeline Ukraine, I'll put out a link for it a little bit later on. And if you can help out, please do. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. A sad story I want to make sure I mention here because, yeah, this is horrible. The University of Missouri is moving to discipline 13 students who allegedly hazed an incoming fraternity member from Minnesota, leaving him with severe brain damage. It was announced on Thursday that the university has issued proposed disciplinary sanctions for the alleged involvement in the incident on October 19th of last year, in which a 19-year-old Daniel Centulli went into cardiac arrest after being forced to drink an entire bottle of vodka in an apparent hazing incident. Yikes. His family attorney said in the statement to Bring Me the News back in February that Centulli couldn't speak and was unaware of his surroundings. He remains under medical care as of Thursday. The criminal investigation on the incident is still active at this time, but Thomas and Mary Pat Centulli filed a lawsuit on January 27th against the fraternity, the since-closed chapter of Phi Gamma Delta, otherwise known as Fiji. In addition, 22 others were named in the suit, including individually naming members of the fraternity. According to the university, the Family Education Rights Privacy Act prevents the university from providing details about the disciplinary decisions. However, university sanctions can be severe, including suspension or expulsion. Well, I'm going to guess you need to go with kind of the latter here, but we don't really know what any of that means, but what it consists of. One of the attorneys representing the Centulli family told the news, but is it slap on the wrist? Is it meaningful? We just don't know at this point. The lawyer noted how the fraternity was sanctioned just 13 days before the incident involving Centulli. The fraternity members were told to no longer have alcohol in the house, and yet they thumbed their nose at the new sanctions and planned this event that Danny Centulli was at. He added that he and the family feel skeptical that anything will be done that makes an impact, noting the university's handlings of the fraternity before the incident ever transpired. Phi Gamma Delta chapter of the University of Missouri has a long and sordid history of violations of alcohol abuse going back to when the seniors in the frat were freshmen and going through the pledging process, the lawsuit says. Family attorney said that night Centulli was pledging the fraternity. He was pressured to drink an entire bottle of Tito's vodka as part of a fraternity tradition during a pledge dead reveal night party. Wow. Just, I mean, I've heard of irresponsible drinking things at fraternities. Chugging an entire bottle of vodka? Yeah. Wow, how stupid are you guys? The Eden Prairie native ended up collapsing on the couch in the frat house, and then around midnight, a fraternity member found him unresponsive with pale skin and blue lips. Someone put him in a car and drove him to the hospital instead of calling 911, the lawsuit alleges. The 19-year-old had a blood alcohol content of 0.468, six times the legal limit. God, I thought you're getting close to dying there. University hospital staff went into the car, found Centulli wasn't breathing and in cardiac arrest. He was rushed into an intensive care unit and put on a ventilator until able to breathe on his own. Days later, Centulli was removed from the ventilator, started breathing on his own, but was unresponsive, unaware of his surroundings, unable to communicate, and had significant injuries to his brain. The lawsuit also stated that Centulli faced a month of abuse from his frat brothers. He was handled a bottle of vodka after being forced to do many tasks for the fraternity members, with one incident involving Centulli being ordered to climb in a trash can with broken glass in it. He later had to get stitches at the hospital, with his injuries requiring him to use crutches. God, who are these idiots? I mean, it's interesting because one of the things which I made the point of is in regards to a completely separate issue, but in the forgiving of college debt, the idea that we're going to forgive college debt, the people that are most against it are using the same arguments that started coming out in the 80s and the 90s about stopping hazing rituals. Now, I am 53. When I went through high school, there were numerous hazing rituals. And I've often said one of the what ended up stopping them in their tracks was some idiot went to the back of his car and poured used motor oil over one of the you know, soon to be band members' heads. Well, the oil had metal fragments in it, and it got in her eyes, and so it was a really dangerous situation. And everyone was like, oh, I guess maybe this is not the best thing in the world to do. And yeah, they basically got rid of it. But there were parents at the time who were saying, come on, so one person made a mistake. And it really is this kind of, I was abused, so I need to abuse someone else. And can I just say, if you are a person that thinks that, shut up and go get some counseling. For God's sakes, you are a broken individual. But that's kind of the same argument people use in regards to forgiving college debt. Even though it's actually hurting our economy, it's hurting college graduates, it's hurting people that are trying to, you know, make way in the business world. And once again, it's, you know, to compare college, the cost of college education from when a guy 60 years old was going to college to a kid that's going today is not even close. I mean, it's, you know, an argument can be made. It's you know, they're trying to put the workforce into forced servitude before they even work a day of the job in the career field they're studying for goodness sakes. But the argument that they'll say is, well, I had to go through it, so you got to go through it too. Just stupidity. This is hard to believe that this fraternity was operating. I mean, how in the hell? I mean, okay, my son has a friend who went to University of Missouri. He went to the University of Minnesota, and he said the friend said, "Oh yeah, it's a real big party school. They have a lot of parties over there." Generally, schools that have that reputation, University of Madison, Milwaukee, or University of Wisconsin, Madison had that for many years, still does to a point, is that there is always kind of a blind eye turned towards certain things that are, you know, should probably be regulated and should be probably, you know, people held responsible. But now it's kind of one of those things where, I mean, you should, the school should at least be straightforward in saying, yeah, all the people involved in this have been thrown out of the university. And maybe they're afraid of lawsuits there, but I don't think you're going to be able to I think you'd have a pretty decent argument to throw all these kids out of that university. The university said all those who are sanctioned will be provided due process per the conduct process, including the option to contest the proposed sanctions. In addition, the university also stated it's conducting a review of campus behavior, including but not limited to alcohol consumption, drug use, hazing, and sexual misconduct. My thoughts remain with the students and families impacted, said Bill Stackman, vice chancellor of student affairs on Thursday. A Healthy Communities Initiative, which is a review of the campus behavior, our national partnerships, and the conversations I'm having with students and our alumni are aimed at preventing situations like this from happening again. 952-946-6205. By the way, let's turn attentions here to, once again, back to the story of the week, which is the leaked ruling, the 5-4 decision coming down that's going to basically undo the Roe versus Wade. And we have talked a lot about what the argument Alito is making to get rid of this and how dangerous this ruling is, because it's not just about Roe versus Wade. This is clearly a first step. Birth control, this is the argument they're going to try to make is that, well, we're just saying the federal government under the due process clause of the 5th and the 14th Amendment didn't have the authority to include the liberty of being able to get birth control, or, you know, legalizing same-sex marriage, or, you know, legalizing interracial marriage, or getting rid of sodomy laws, or any of these things. And that that this should all go back to the states. But what they know is that there's already states that are ready to go back and turn the clock back 60, 70 years and get rid of the rights of people to have privacy on birth control. I mean, you just heard the story in the news there with Tennessee, where they're basically saying you can't get the day after pill anymore in the state. Not anymore, even if it comes in the mail, which is violating interstate commerce laws. I'm going to be interested to see how the Supreme Court rules on that. But my guess is going to be is that they're going to say if Tennessee wants to violate this, then they can. And so it's interesting. There's a lot of people that are saying that this was leaked clearly by someone on the left. Actually, and I'm convinced 100% it's someone on the right. Jennifer Chad appeared Friday on MSNBC's Morning Joe to discuss his latest column, which theorized that someone who wants the 5-4 decision banning abortion to stand, based on another leak a few days prior to Politico's bombshell report on Justice Alito's draft opinion. I want to be clear. I have no idea who leaked this, and I definitely could have come out from the left. But I wrote this because so much of the commentary from the right simply assume that the leaks that come from the left and ignore the fact that we have a smaller leak 3 days before from the Wall Street Journal that had the same effect that they're decrying, which is to put public pressure on the justices to rule in a certain way. That is the reason they are say this leak is so dangerous, because it subjects the justices to the kind of lobbying that will exactly that is exactly why the Wall Street Journal was leaked this early version. And an editorial published on January 26 showed that Chief Justice Roberts was trying to persuade one of the court's conservatives to join him in a more moderate ruling on the Mississippi case Dobbs versus the Jackson Women's Health Organization in stepping back from overturning the landmark abortion ruling. And Chait notes that how closely the Journal called it. If Roberts pulls another justice to his side, he could write the plurality opinion that controls a 6-3 decision. The editorial said if he can't, then Justice Thomas would resign the opinion and the vote would be 5-4. Our guess is that Justice Alito would then get the assignment. And that's exactly what happened based on the draft opinion. So, you know, let's not bury the lead here. The lead is that a woman's right to choose is going to be gone, which is not about abortion. It's about Republicans controlling what goes on in the bedroom. And that's really what we're talking about. These things, which are, you know, it's kind of hard to even comprehend that this is, we're revisiting this. But it goes down to everything, whether or not you can legally have contraception, whether or not you can marry who you love, for God's sakes. And once again, what kind of sex you can have. We should remind her that one of the reasons due process for the rights of liberty and privacy were used to strike down sodomy laws in this country, which we're basically trying to dictate. We're conservatives trying to dictate how you had sex. Which brings me to my next guest. I would like to introduce, from apparently the GOP Sex Crimes Division, Reginald Wet Noodle, who is kind enough to join us today to talk about the Republicans' plans for what kind of sex you can have in your bedroom. Reginald, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Of course. It's so nice to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, Reginald Wet Noodle. Wet Noodle, is that French?
I have no idea, but French stuff I try to avoid all the time.
Okay. So you heard me talking about this. Why are you trying to regulate what goes on in the bedroom? Don't you have, you know, sex of some sort?
Of course I do. All the time. Well, not all. All right, a few times. Okay, three. Three times in my life I've had sex. Now, the last time was 4 years ago. My wife and I had 4 days of Bible study beforehand to prep us for it. And boy, oh boy, was it jolly time. I had a great time. Now, if you all have sexual relations like me, you're going to be just fine. Just fine. We've got rules and regulations. This is not going to impact anybody. It's just about, we don't like this idea of people getting too freaky with it, okay? It's just that you got to do things in a specific way.
Specific way? So, I'm confused here. Specific way, how do you mean specific way? I mean, aren't people entitled to, you know, engage in sexual activity within their own bedrooms, in their private residences, with whomever and however they want to?
No, of course not. Nope. First things first, that light's got to be out.
What?
That's right. Darkness. No ogling.
Wait a second. You're saying no ogling during sex? Are you sure you've had sex before there, Reginald?
Of course I have. No. You see, if you leave the lights on, you start getting crazy, wacky ideas about what you can do there. And, you really got to keep that in perspective. So one of the GOP party platform's big points is going to be no lights on when you have sex.
Wow. All right. Where else are you guys going to go with this?
Well, you see, we are going to do this in kind of more of a geometric shape sort of thing. So here's what's tolerated, okay? Perpendicular and parallel.
Perpendicular and parallel. Wow, that's kind of limited.
I think it's perfectly fine. Everyone can enjoy sex like that. That's it. Perpendicular or parallel.
So parallel can be head, feet.
No. You pervert. No. What are you? Oh, no. You face to face in the dark and don't even question it. That's all you get. Parallel.
Well, how about the rest of the geometric shapes? Circle?
No.
Hexagon?
No.
Rhombus? Everyone likes a good rhombus.
No, you perv. No, you can't do the rhombus either. You can only do perpendicular or parallel, face-to-face, as God intended.
Where did God write all this? Wait a second. Where did God intend all of this?
It's in there somewhere. Check Leviticus. It's usually in Leviticus.
All right. Once again, if you're missing us, Reginald Wet Noodle is joining us. He is from the GOP Sex Crimes Division. This is when eventually they get rid of all the rules that, you know, allow you to do whatever you want to and love whoever you want to in the manner that you want to within your own home, in your own bedroom. He's going to be part of the Action Strike Force team.
Oh, I like that.
He's going to be part of that comes down there and tells you how you can have sex. So, Reginald.
Yes?
All right, I'm going to give you a series of positions.
How would you know all these, you pervert?
Well, I was stationed in Europe in the military. I mean, come on. Hey, I like having fun, my friend. You need to lighten up. That's your problem. You need to lighten up. So I'm going to ask you these things. I understand perpendicular and parallel. That's kind of where you're going with things. Ooh, the excitement of it all. But I'm going to – let me just ask you if any of these following things – will any of this be okay? Just any of these following, you know, positions or anything like that, all right? You tell me if this is going to work, all right?
Give it a shot.
Amazon.
No.
Eiffel Tower.
No.
Pile driver.
No.
Helicopter.
No.
Valedictorian.
No.
Spork.
No.
TJ Hooker.
What?
Gotcha. Yeah. That's actually a TV show from the 1980s with William Shatner, and it was TJ Hooker.
Sounds like a sex position to me, but no, you can't do the TJ Hooker either.
How about Magic Mountain? Magic Mountain's fun. Have you ever done Magic Mountain?
No! Listen here, and to everyone out there, this is our goal. Just because we have not ever been able to experience the joy of the sex that we wanted to, as opposed to go on out and experience that in our own lives, we're going to sit there and make sure everybody else's sex life sucks. So just deal with it. That's the rules. That's the way it goes. 5-4, 5-4.
Wow. So, doesn't this... you used to be the party. Didn't the Republican Party used to be the party of personal responsibility?
Yeah, it sure is. It still is today.
But you're trying to tell us, Mr. Wet Noodle, that we can't go out and do what we want to do and love who we want to love. I mean, isn't that really kind of evil?
Not at all. Not at all. See, love is a many splendored thing that you should always look at in very, very restrictive clothing. You don't want to give anybody any hints. So, you know, make sure the ankles are covered up, no shoulders, you know, really just, you know, three-piece suit it all the time. I mean, really, you don't want to linger in there. You can start going down bad paths.
Bad paths can be fun, man. I'm just going to let you know. I think that, Mr. Reginald, I just think that you're just a bunch of uptight jackasses that basically feel as it's your responsibility to morally condemn people because you guys are too much of afraid cowards to go on out there and experience the life that you really wish you could. And through repression and anger and browbeating and probably some abuse, let's be honest about it, here you are, you're going to come down and you're going to try to impose new rules on how people can have sex in their bedrooms. That is pretty dang disgusting.
Yeah. All right, okay, fine. I'm not going to deny that this is a little bit more restrictive than most people are going to be used to, but, you know, I'll tell you what, maybe you and I could call a deal of some sort here. Would you let me watch some of these things? I can then determine if they're really... No! No, Reginald, no. I am not going to allow you to creep her in the corner, dude. And no, 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 dude, no. You need... Can I suggest, you know, maybe a vacation, tropical paradise, you know, a little dancing, a few drinks on the beach. Let things happen. Don't be so shy. Have some fun.
Never. Never. I leave a repressed life, and damn it, everyone else is going to lead a repressed life, too. So you better get used to it. We're coming into your bedroom, and we're going to be watching all the time. You're the pervs.
There is Reginald Wet Noodle, the GOP sex crimes division guy, who's already prepared to tell you what kind of sex you can have in your bedroom when the GOP and Justice Alito have their way. Ugh. By the way, can we just for the fun of it, can we create a sexual position called the Alito? I don't even want to get it. Involves five people. No, never mind. Oh, talk about rigid. Ugh. We'll take a break. Come on back. Some Friday dancing for you when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. You want me to give you some nightmares, kids? Oh, I give you some nightmares. Imagine the people determining what kind of sex you can have and who you can have it with in your own private residence are Paul Gazelka, Mary Franson, and Dr. Scott Jensen. Do you ever want to have sex like a big tub of paste? Well... But paste is not allowed in the bedroom. Just let's make sure. That's kinky stuff. Not allowed in a Republican world. Yikes. Ugh. This is where they're going, people. Roe v. Wade is the beginning. They're going to regulate who you can love, what you can do with that person, birth control, all of it. This is just, you know, a handful of far right stooges that we got to stop. And reminder, Vote. Walks are great. You know, having a protest is fine. Good protest time, good stuff. The reality is the only thing that matters is voting. Only thing that matters is voting. So get registered to vote. Get five of your friends registered to vote. Ask anyone that you're friends with on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, hey, is everyone here registered to vote? And if someone comes back and says no, help them get registered to vote and help them get their vote in on November 8th because, my God, we have got to take this country back. We have to take it back quickly. Friday dancing, why not? Gary Moore. Like Gary Moore. The only fool in town. That is appropriate for me. Have a great weekend. We are back on a Monday. Till then, see ya.